Good morning, everybody. The regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Waters District is called to order. Mr. Rieke, if you would be kind, sir, it's time enough to give us the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our flag is bright in color, with brilliance and courage, and firm faith to the ethos that our sincere pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of directors. Director Fellows.
Yes.
Director Chalmers, present, present to you. So we have a quorum. We will move on to the adoption of the agenda.
Move.
Your second? Do I hear a second on that? If not, I'll second.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Mr.
Sir?
President, if I may, we were going to consider moving up to one and then.
Yes.
E. But folks are not here yet.
Okay.
Your pleasure.
Well, when they get in, we'll stop it. Yeah. Public comment? Is there anybody here who wants to exercise to speak before the board? Anyone wishing to do so should do so now. And the board may allow additional input during the meeting, a 3-minute time limit on remarks as requested. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the minutes. Do I hear a motion for the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
On the minutes are good. However, on the item on one of the pages where we removed the event director seat from the consent calendar and voted, I mentioned that I wanted to adopt Urias's comment on the previous item. We were talking about budgets and employees and how it might be good. He said because of the economy, I can't remember their name here. On 11-885, that was his argument to add employees. Well, I adopted the same argument for the med directors, but that argument didn't appear. For the sake of time, I didn't want to repeat what Urias had just said. So anyway, I just wanted something to that effect. But that was my reason for choosing other than the director that the board chose.
Okay.
So, but otherwise, the minutes are good. So with that correction.
All right, sir. I think it's been noted by the general manager. So all in favor?
Aye.
Demands from general fund account, Mr. Chapman.
Yeah, Mr. President, we have a total demand of a little over $413,000 on the general fund account. Of note, demand or check 16333 in the amount of a little over $184,000. That is to Coalition, our contractor, on package 2. About 84% of the total contract amount, $1.9 million, has been paid so far. 16335, that's in for engineering services in May. Contractor T.E. Roberts. On the Rosemead extension, the retrofit construction for Rosemead extension, about $413,000, 18% into that contract. Foothill Technology Center, and that's the lease payment for this facility and U.S. Bank.
How much are we into this assessment? How much? 18%?
18% for T.E. Roberts, our construction contractor, demand number 16339. Yeah, just getting started there. Work's going well, though.
Okay. Do we have a motion to accept the demands?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
There is no financial statement. The committee reports are included in the board package. Moving on to the action discussion items. Item number 9, update regarding Metropolitan Water District's Integrated Resource Plan. We have a presentation, Mr. Chapman?
We do. Mr. Devin Upadhyay is here from Metropolitan Water District. Mr. Upadhyay is the Water Resources Manager for Metropolitan. Just a quick minute, if I may, on context for the board. This item appears on your agenda because, as you're all aware, Metropolitan Upper District has launched into its own Integrated Resources Plan, and one of the fundamental tenets of that plan will, of course, be weighing the reliability of the imported water system against other options such as indirect reuse recycling. So I wanted to provide an opportunity for the board and our audience to hear directly from Metropolitan the status of Metropolitan's recently completed IRP, as well as challenges and recent successes both on the Colorado River and the State Water Project. Just setting the stage a bit now early on for upcoming discussions and workshops conducted by CDM, our consultant on Upper District's IRP, and Mr. Dan Rodrigo and Mr. David Ebersole from Camp Crestor McKee, Upper District's consultant, are here to follow Devin and provide a presentation on where we are in that process and a little more detail for the board on the stakeholder process and the decision-making tools that you'll work with through CDM to develop Upper District's preferred resource mix.
Before we start, if I may, I'd like to see if we could, we have an item, Mr. Chapman, that regarding, what's that number on there?
Item 9E, the discussion regarding,
Yes.
And it's a discussion regarding the professional service proposals for board redistricting process.
And Director Chavez, Director Stan, will take this item to the board for discussion from his committee or from the committee. I think there was consensus on the board that we can take this item before before the presentation. So let's move on that.
Make a better use of everybody's time.
Right. If you don't mind, Devin. Congressman Dimley, and we will take your item up, item 9D, which is the item regarding the professional services for board redistricting process. Right now, we'll take it now. Do we want to hear? Do you want to make any kind of presentation, or we could? Yeah. 2 minutes, okay.
Good morning, members of the San Diego Municipal Water District. My name is Mervyn Dimley. I'm here representing the Pool and State of Consultants, and we want to make a presentation for redistricting of the district, and we do so on what we think is a very unique relationship. We know you. You know us. We can sit down and talk on a one-to-one basis over a cup of tea or a glass of wine. No hard liquor. We understand this process. We've been in with the water business since 1993 with Brother Trevino being one of the pioneers in opening up this water district for underserved people. And so we are technologically sound. We have good relationship all the way to the Speaker's office, Berkeley Center, and we have some very young, bright graduates of Berkeley Woodwinners. So I want to repeat that we think our unique presentation has to do with our relationship with board members. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Congressman. Is there any questions for you?
Yes.
Actually, I would just like to welcome the congressman. It's such an honor to have you here.
Indeed, thank you, sir.
You have such a history in politics, and it's great to be able to take this opportunity, you know, hopefully if our board agrees with it, to be able to work with you on such an important process that's for our district, and that will ultimately reflect some of the innovations and items you've championed. So thank you for being here with us.
Anybody else?
Yes, Mr. President, I too want to echo Board Member Rice's comments. We heard the presentation in my committee here just a couple of days, wanted to bring the proposal forward to the board. This is a great proposal. I think it's something that we need, and certainly the congressman and his staff are doing a terrific job in other water districts. We just wanted to bring that experience to us. Mark Dimley and I served together as colleagues in the state legislature, and he was a man of his word, and
And we had a good relationship, good personal relationship, other than legislation. I think we actually voted together.
Yeah. Not all the time, but I think he's a true statesman, and it would be great if he could work for our district here.
Absolutely.
Anybody else? Mike, she said, welcome, Congressman.
Thank you.
And I have had drinks together, and I always enjoy your company, and always voted for you.
Thank you.
In all the elections I could. And please say hello to your son.
Thank you very much.
Well, Congressman, let me round it up. You and I have pulled back many, many years. You know, this was something that you, along with Mark and other folks, started. And people of color on these water boards, getting representation on these water boards, going back to almost 20 years now. And I am honored to have you here. I'm honored to work with you. You're a dear friend, you, Mark, the whole family. I look forward to working with you. And thank you for being here, and thank you for taking the time to grace us with your presence.
There's a comfort level.
The comfort level is always there.
The board and
us. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and, Mr. President, I'll be dissenting on this issue. My reasoning is mainly for discussion in closed session. But I feel young Berkeley grads are certainly very bright and very capable, but in this instance, what we need is experience, and the Rose Institute has always done this work for us in the past, and their experience is as expert witnesses, and in this case, I would prefer that we work a plan that is relatively bulletproof, because whether the plan that we approve is the one that ends up finally being adopted is, in this instance.
Mr. Sherman, may I just briefly respond?
Yes.
In terms of experience, I go back to 1971. I created the first Latino Senate district for Alex Garcia. And so I was the first person of color in California to head a redistricting committee. And I've been involved in every one for the last 30 years, every redistricting project.
Well,
so we bring experience.
Absolutely. In the year 2000, the upper district was the recipient of a Department of Justice Voting Rights Act lawsuit. We were in federal court. So two of our divisions exist now because of the supervision of the Department of Justice. There's that, and I'm not convinced that the same thing couldn't happen again. So that's the reason. Your experience goes back quite a ways. The Rose Institute experience also.
Thank you. Mr. Rash?
I'd like to make a motion to approve.
Second. Okay. There's a motion and a second on the floor. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And I'll vote against.
Say aye. Those opposed.
Okay. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. And
thank you. Look forward to working with you, Congressman. So, moving on to Devin.
All yours, Devin. Thank you, Mr. President and General Manager Chapman. The General Manager invited me today to talk a little bit about the planning process that Metropolitan goes through looking out 25 years. We refer to it as Metropolitan's Integrated Resources Plan. So I'll talk to you a bit about that and then some of the things that are impacting our imported supplies today. Real quick, these are all statistics that you're familiar with, but we are the Metropolitan Water District, the wholesaler for urban Southern California. We provide about half of the water that's used in Southern California, with the remaining half provided by local supplies, some imported through LA's aqueduct system, but most of those supplies coming from local sources, groundwater, recycled water, and the like. Our service area is about 19 million people, although with the recent census update for 2010, we think that number may be adjusted lower a little bit. You can see on this graphic a depiction of the different sources of water that we use here in Southern California. I'm going to cover some of these major sources a little bit later in the presentation, but a lot of focus in the last few years on the Bay Delta area, which is the headworks for the State Water Project and a key hub of water supply for both the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project. I'm not going to speak to the CDP much today, but that's a key supply for the Valley area and agricultural production in the state. If you look to our region highlighted in the yellow down there, you can see that the State Water Project supplies come in to the service area. You've also got the Colorado River Aqueduct built by Metropolitan in the 30s to bring water from the Colorado River system. And then arrows showing conservation and local groundwater and recycling being key supplies that are in our area. That's one thing that I would point out in our planning. We do refer to conservation as a supply in the sense that additional water use efficiency provides a benefit for reliable supplies and secure supplies in our region, and we do it that way. A bit about our integrated resources plan. This is a plan that started back in 1994, and has been updated multiple times over the years. We view it as a living document in the sense that it isn't a plan that you just put on the shelf and pay attention to the numbers. We're constantly having to adjust based on change conditions. It's our blueprint for reliable supplies, and it provides direction to our staff to look at the approaches that we'll use to develop supplies over time, also to take a look at how we monitor our progress. And I'm going to talk about that on our State Water Project in Colorado supplies a little bit later. In 2010, our board updated our integrated resources plan, and we really adopted a three-component approach. The component one here we refer to as our core resources strategy. And that strategy is supposed to provide reliable supplies under planned conditions. And when I say planned conditions, imagine the history that we have, the knowledge we have about what historic hydrology looks like. Some years are very hot and dry, other years are very cool and wet. This part of our strategy will provide us reliable supplies under what we know to be that range of possibilities. The second component is what we refer to as a supply buffer. This is a buffer that we will be implementing through water use efficiency through what we refer to as a 20% reduction per capita water use by 2020, that goal. That provides us additional certainty of supply, the notion that beyond those historic hydrologies, we're going to have a little bit of buffer to protect us. And finally, a new strategy known as foundational actions. The idea here is that for things like seawater desalination, new recycled water facilities, in many cases it takes 6 to 10 years to get these projects online. Let's do things now that can set the foundation to bring those things online faster if we need them. So this is the three different components. I'd like to focus a little bit on component one. What are the elements there? The first element is water use efficiency, and that's a cornerstone of our plan. I referred earlier to this 20 by 2020. This deals with the retail compliance. I think you know that there was legislation passed in 2009 that would require retail water users or entities to reduce per capita water use under this plan. Our focus is a regional 20% reduction per capita water use. So simple numbers for us is in 2005, our average use was about 180 gallons per capita per day, and we'll be driving that down to about 140 over the next 10 years. Local resources, we provide incentives for the development of local resources in our region, and our board also gave us a signal that we should look at potential partnerships with agencies beyond just giving a dollar for an acre foot, but potentially partnering with agencies to develop those new supplies. On the State Water Project, the key target there is to complete the Delta improvements, and I've got some slides that will speak to what those are, but really trying to add a new balance in the Delta region between the ecology and providing sustainable ecological resources there and a conveyance solution that will allow water to flow to the State Water Project without having adverse impacts on the ecology. And finally, the Colorado River Aqueduct, and our goal there is to be able to have a full Colorado River Aqueduct in dry years when it's needed most in our region. This is the general summary. You can review that, but that basically goes through what I just said. So what does this plan do from a reliability perspective? Let me take a minute to explain this graphic. If you look at, say, the line for 2015, this shows you in the blue that about 90% of the time we would not have a shortage in our service area. And about 10% of the time, that red shows that we would. And it would get worse in 10-year increments. Out to 2025, you can see the red becomes a larger portion of that graphic. By 2035, about half the time you'd be in shortage, and half the time you'd be in balance or surplus. This is the picture of what things could look like for the future if we did not take any further action. We didn't invest further in water use efficiency. We didn't have the target to solve the issues in the Bay Delta. And we didn't have a full aqueduct in dry years on the Colorado River. But that's not our plan. The Integrated Resources Plan provides a reliability picture that looks like this. Under those planned conditions, we don't see a scenario where you would have shortages in 2025 and 2035. There is a small risk in 2015 as we're putting things into place. There are obviously unforeseen circumstances that could arise that are outside the realm of this, but certainly for the range of hydrologies that we see, we think we'd be protected if we're able to pull this plan off and meet those investments that I've mentioned. So we believe it's a plan for secure supplies in the future. I'd like to talk a little bit about our system and what we see on the State Water Project in Colorado River. Our system is obviously a major wholesale system with large surface water reservoirs on the right side of this picture with Diamond Valley Lake, Lake Skinner, and Lake Matthews. Hundreds of miles of pipelines and conveyance distribution system with five major treatment plants that I'm sure you're familiar with. Getting to some of our key resources here on the Colorado River. The background on the Colorado River is interesting. There's an allocation among a series of states that participates in the Colorado River. The yellow here are the upper basin states, and the green are the lower basin states, of which California is one. And what you see in the blue there is the way that Colorado River supplies are apportioned to the states in this area, with the state of California having the largest apportionment. And I'll tell you, that 4.4 million acre feet is something that the state is now striving to stay within. There were many years in history where the state of California is actually using more than 4.4 million acre feet. In 2003, we adopted a plan in the state to live within that 4.4 by doing transfers among agencies, agricultural and urban agencies, in the service area of California to stay within 4.4 million acre feet. But there are continuing lingering issues with the parties on the Colorado River. As you can see here in the yellow, the 5.1 represents our average deliveries in the state of California in the 1990s. And this concerned the other states because they saw if California was using more than its allotment, that would mean that they would potentially be getting less water than their allotments over time. The total of the blue, the total apportionments, are 15 million acre feet among the states and then 1.5 million acre feet for Mexico. So that total is 16.5 million acre feet. And one of the issues that we see right now is if you were to look at recent hydrology, the flows on the Colorado River, are closer to 14 million. And so long-term average, there's plenty of supply for these states, but short-term, over the last 20 years or so, you can see that those flows, there's a little bit of risk because it's less than that. So we've been working hard to maintain this agreement, which we refer to as the Quantification Settlement Agreement, to stay within California's apportionment of that 4.4 million acre feet. If you look at our supply, the CRA supply, Metropolitan is allotted 550,000 acre feet, basic apportionment, which means to get a full aqueduct, which is 1.25 million acre feet, we have to do water management programs to fill that gap. And that's about 700,000 acre feet. So you might asked himself the question, how does Metropolitan plan on having that full aqueduct? This is a build here. You can see that basic apportionment is the bottom portion, rock solid supply coming to Metropolitan from the Bureau, our contract with the Bureau. But we've got a whole series of transactions that we've executed, and one of our member agencies, the San Diego County Water Authority, has executed to put additional supplies into this aqueduct. The red there is a conservation program that we executed in the late 80s with the Imperial Irrigation District to conserve water within their service area. That provides about 100,000 acre feet. You can see the green is the transaction that I'm sure many of you have heard of that was executed with the County Water Authority and Imperial Irrigation District. Two canal linings of the Coachella and All-American Canal. These were basically ditches that were bringing water into their service areas, IID and Coachella, that we helped fund concrete linings of those canals so that they don't seep water anymore. That saved water is able to flow to us through our aqueduct. An innovative program with the Palo Verde Irrigation District that we executed to fallow land in that service area, make payments for that land fallowing to the farmers, allowing water to flow through us or to us through the priority system. And finally, that top component, in the years when we need a full aqueduct, we have a storage program we negotiated with the Bureau and the other states that allows storage of up to 1.5 million acre feet in Lake Mead. That water sits there, and in a dry year when we need that full aqueduct, we're able to pull that water into the aqueduct and fill it for supply that can be used in our service area. On the State Water Project, a little bit of background here. You can see that the only major conservation facility or storage facility on the State Water Project that produces new supplies is Lake Oroville on the Feather River. You can see that being the highest most circle there. Then you look at the larger circle, that is the Bay Delta area with some conveyance and ecology issues I'll speak to in a few minutes. And then the highlighted green is the State Water Project facilities, with the two lower dots being the locations where the State Water Project facilities end on the east and west branch, producing water into our system that we then deliver in our system. We've got a whole series of programs along the aqueduct, the State Water Project, that help us provide reliable supplies. I would point you to the right of this graphic, storage-based transfers. Agreements that we've executed with Semitropic Water District, Arvin Edison, Kern Delta, Mojave, these are agencies through which we have storage programs. Those storage programs are with groundwater basins, where we take water off of the State Water Project, dump it into the groundwater basins there. It remains stored. We pay fees for the storage of that water. And then in dry years, like the last 2 years, 2009 and 2010, we're able to pull significant amounts of water back out, bring it into the aqueduct, and it flows into our service area. Those kind of programs along the State Water Project are able to augment the storage resources we have within the yellow area, our service area. A bit on the Delta, there are a series of key risks there. You may have heard of the name Jeffrey Mount, Dr. Jeffrey Mount. He has done a series of studies looking at the seismic risks that are within the Delta that show that there's roughly a 50% chance over the next 35 years of a significant earthquake that could occur in the Delta region that would provide instability for the levee system and the water delivery system that's in the Delta. Sea level rise over time is a risk for those same levees. Subsidence is an issue, and what that graphic shows is that there's been farming in the Delta on the islands within the Delta that are behind many of these levees, and the level of the land within those levee systems is now in many cases lower than the surface water elevation on the other side of the levee. So you can imagine that if you have a breach of those levees, you have a problem with those islands, they can be inundated with water, and it represents a water quality risk for us, because then you would have, you know, some of the pesticides, the salts that have built up in that land covered by water, and that water is then eventually flowing to our headworks in the State Water Project. So risks there, and then finally, fishery decline. And this is something that we've heard a lot about with respect to the Delta smelt. You see on that graphic that as we were coming into the new millennium, It looked like populations of the Delta smelt were on the increase, and they really fell off the face of the map as you pass through 2000. Hence, many of the issues that we're dealing with right now, we refer to regulatory water costs or a regulatory drought. In 2007, there was a court decision by Judge Wanger in the federal courts that put limitations in place for the pumping restrictions on the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project that were meant to protect the species. And you can see here that that has cost us a significant amount of water supply over 2008 through 2010. What I'll do here is on this graphic show you what it's meant to do. There are periods where, because of the pumping in the southern portion of the Delta, you get a condition known as reverse flows in the Delta. From the Sacramento River in the north flowing down to those pumps, the typical flow would be out through the Delta towards the San Francisco Bay Bridge. Instead, you occasionally get the scenario where the flows are actually going into the southern portion of the Delta. The issue with the Delta smelt is they're really not very good swimmers. So they move with the water. And as the water is pulled towards the pump, there's a risk for the adult fish, and even more so, there's a risk for the larva and their offspring. So that decision, that court decision, was meant to improve the hydraulics in the Delta so that those species wouldn't be pulled into the pumps. The solution that we're working towards through a process known as the Bay Delta Conservation Plan is to try to put conveyance facilities in place, and there are a number of alternatives. What you see here is a through Delta alternative, which would be moving water through the Delta. Another option would be moving water around the Delta, similar to the peripheral canal proposal from the early 80s on the easterly side. There's a westerly route that would have a series of tunnels side by side that would go under the major waterways in the Delta. And there's also an option that goes basically straight through the Delta, tunneling almost all the way. Those options, the reasoning behind those options is you get the major pumps in the southern part of the Delta away from pulling species and affecting the hydraulics in the Delta. You have headworks, if I go back, you can see there the headworks farther in the north, closer to the Sacramento River.
Where are the headworks? What's the actual location?
It's just north of a facility on the Hood, or a town named Hood, in the northern portion of the Delta. We're also dealing with other factors that are impacting the State Water Project and Delta supplies. There are other stressors there, and I simply wanted to point out that these are things that are on our map that we're working towards. We think that it's been convenient for people to point to the pumping in the Delta as a smoking gun, but we also believe that many of these other stressors are even more of an issue for the species in the Delta than pumping. Particularly on the toxic pollutants front, we've done a lot of research that shows that these have an effect on the food web in the Delta. The food supply for these fish is impacted, and if there isn't food in the Delta for them, they're not going to survive. Finally, I'm getting through this pretty quick, so it shouldn't be too much longer. Local resources program here, we have a program that's in place that provides incentives for the development of new local resources within our service area. Things like recycling, groundwater recovery, those have been big areas that we've focused on. I'll tell you, seawater desalination is on the forefront of things. We've got three contracts that are locked in place right now where agencies are pursuing desalination. If they bring those facilities online, they'll get incentives from us to produce that supply. Here you can see many of the contracts that we've got in place throughout the region. The history of this program is such that we produced about 2 million acre-feet through these programs going back since the beginning and provided about $400 million in incentives. And these programs remain in place going forward. Water use efficiency, similarly, significant investments on the part of Metropolitan to provide incentives for people to install efficient devices, for businesses to install efficient devices. Here, the history of this program is through these incentives, we produced more than 1.4 million acre-feet of water saved, and we spent almost $300 million in these incentives over the years. I just wanted to show you a graphic looking at what per capita water use has been within our service area. From the mid-90s through to the late 2000s, you can see that it's bounced around based on the conditions each year. But the average over this period is about, it used 180 before, it's about 180 GPCD, exact figure is 177. And we are focused on driving that down to 141 gallons per capita per day by 2020. So hopefully making significant headway in improving reliability on this front, augmenting the fact that we're also developing these other supplies that I mentioned through these other resources. A little bit of background on the conservation program. Our focus is not to simply provide incentives forever on a particular device. The key that we're looking for is market transformation. And the example that I'll give you here is what has happened with respect to toilets in our service area. Back in the early 90s, we focused on a new technology which was referred to as ultra-low-flow toilets. It moved the bar to each toilet having a standard of about 1.6, a little bit more than 1.6 gallons per flush. That was the new technology at the time. We started testing and evaluation of how those toilets would work and whether they were worthy of being brought into the market. And we started with a catalyst, which was our incentives. We started providing incentives for people to buy these toilets. We saw that they became more prevalent in the marketplace. People started accepting them. Then we started moving standards and regulations at the state level. We put those standards in place to a point where now those toilets were the only type of toilet that you could buy in the state of California. And at that point, we started to pull back our incentives and focus on the new low-hanging fruit, which was high-efficiency toilets, a lower standard. Now we've gone through the same cycle for high-efficiency toilets, and starting January 1st of 2014, high-efficiency toilets will be the only type of toilet that you can purchase in the state of California. We use this type of program cycle for other things. Shower heads, we're starting to do the same thing with weather-based irrigation controllers. So outside water use is our new focus, and that's really what we'd be using this program cycle for in the coming years. Finally, to put a cap on all this is the tough message in all of this. We do see that water rates at Metropolitan are going to continue to climb over the years, and this is looking out 25 years. So 2035 rates of $1,600 an acre foot, that's pretty significant. A lot can happen in 25 years, but the message I'd like to give you is we see a future with reliable water supplies, but we also think that the cost of those water supplies will go up in order to pay for those investments. And that's generally it. Reliability, we think, is a cornerstone to our plan, and we seek to achieve.
Thanks, Devin. Real quick, is the ability for water transfers, you see that in the future for the allowing of water transfer between member agencies? Is that something the board is going to consider or allow this to happen? What do you think?
I guess the first thing is that agencies have the ability to go out and purchase transfers. The Water Authority has certainly done that. We've had a few other agencies that have pursued that in the last 7 years.
DWP is doing that also, I believe.
DWP is pursuing that. They haven't been able to produce one yet, but they are pursuing it. Through our system, we have the ability for agencies to purchase those transfers, move it through our system, and they don't pay our supply fees for those supplies. Instead, the logic is they're paying a supply fee to another entity to acquire that transfer, and they move it through our system. So that's certainly there. One of the things that happened in the last year was there was a significant effort by a Blue Ribbon Committee that looked at Metropolitan, and they were opining on where Metropolitan should be 50 years down the road. And one of the recommendations they made was that Metropolitan should look at a system that may allow more trading transactions among the member agencies. I will tell you that is not a system that is in place right now, but it is something that the Blue Ribbon Committee suggested, and our board may take a look at over the years. Our allocation right now is what we refer to as a needs-based allocation. It's only in place in those driest of years when we can't provide all the supply. But it doesn't provide for that trading. It's more of a needs-based allocation.
Yeah. My feeling is that if that were to be allowed, then we'd have less stress on the Delta in terms of getting supplies from the Delta, and that would allow for agencies to be able to work in, among themselves to enhance local supplies. But that's my point. But Mr. Robinson,
yeah. Yeah, well, you just finished talking about allocation programs. I think allocation programs, speaking for myself, are just an outrage. And it's just a it's a signal that the system has failed. My question is about the QSA. With the lower court has ruled that the legislature can't write a blank check and that it's unconstitutionalized. I was wondering how that litigation is progressing. How much litigation has been filed against the QSA? How's that going?
There's a series of cases, both state and federal. The one that has garnered the most attention is the action to effectively throw out many of the agreements that were under the QSA, about 15 agreements, because as you referenced, there was the perception that the state had an unlimited liability for protecting the Salton Sea, and that was the reasoning for why it was thrown out. There are discussions right now, it's on appeal, but there are also discussions among the agencies that signed on to the QSA agreements about how to either provide secure funding or to go to the State Water Resources Control Board and try to get a determination that the additional measures in the Salton Sea aren't necessary at this point. So there are a number of ways to go about it. One is a funding route, one is a resource board decision, and I think both of those will be pursued.
And my second question, applying technology to help people conserve water is all well and good. However, there's still a lot of brine-type water that's been undeveloped in the Pacific Ocean, if it can be done economically, it's a pretty large source of drinking water. I'd like to see Met sponsor an Ansari X-Fry in a year or two, because of technology that was developed locally. Wealthy people can spend $100,000 and be launched to the edge of space and float around for a couple minutes and come back down. That was that technology evolved directly because of the Ansari X Prize, and that hasn't anything to do with Upper District. It's just a prize that a nonprofit organization based in Santa Monica put up to somebody to solve problems. Well. One problem we have is it's energy intensive, and some of the membranes haven't developed fast enough. There are problems to make our situation more cost effective, and brilliant creative people can see that they're going to get rich if they solve a couple of our problems. You know, they're probably going to focus their attention. So I'd like to see Matt and several others. Agencies whose budgets aren't as impacted as the state of California's budget for almost everybody. It helps you through prize money or something, helps you evolve the energy technologies and the treatment technologies that we need. The technologies are going to evolve on their own anyway, but if we can incentivize that, we can solve problems sooner.
Director Phillip.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that presentation. It's a great summary of problems with both systems. There are two challenges I wanted to mention. One is the Blue Ribbon Committee. The board doesn't seem too motivated to move on with those recommendations, which they should. And secondly is that last year we did a very extensive survey of Southern California about how the public feels about the Bay Delta issues and whether we should go on the ballot with some kind of initiative. And basically they said they're not interested at all. It was very low priority, and this is really the true message. And so then we're looking at what is the message going to be, and hiring firms to deal with that. But those are two big challenges for the Bay Delta system, which has to be fixed.
I agree on the latter. The key issue being the vote for the peripheral canal in 1980 was a strict north-south vote, and we can't afford to have that type of thinking
with respect to the Bay Delta solution now.
I think the good thing is the governor last week said something will be done. So he's really focusing in for everybody. Yeah. Thank you.
And that's along those lines, that's exactly what but my concern is that even if we were to get a fix on the Delta, even if we were to get something approved in terms of spending money on the Delta, or it would take 10 to 15 years to get anything in the Delta, and we don't have that luxury at that time. So this is why Met should be seriously considering the Blue Ribbon Committee recommendations on allowing of enhancing of local supplies and moving water within member agencies to allow that to occur. Met has not been very agreeable to that, and so it's unfortunate. So hopefully the Met Board will consider that, looking at that.
Thank you for that,
Mr. Chapman.
Yeah, Mr. President, if there's no more questions or comments from the board, I just want to thank Mr. Kwani for an excellent presentation that gives us a broad overview of Metropolitan's plan to be reliable, albeit at a cost, and it's incumbent on us to study that plan, understand that plan, and seek out where there is risk. And what I've heard is there is concern about the Bay Delta and the qualification settlement agreement. Those are areas that Metropolitan is working hard at, but we have to get in there and help them and stay
on our part.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Devin.
Thank you, Devin.
Moving on to item 9B, I think you have a presentation from TDM.
Yes, we have a short update. Short update from Mr. Rodrigo, Camp Professor McKee. The genesis of this, again, is to inform this board as we move into our IRP process about the schedule, the milestones, and Dan will touch on that, as well as the process itself, specifically the stakeholder decision-making process. How do we weigh risks, benefits, what's important to this board and Upper District's customers in choosing the preferred resource mix?
Okay.
Mr. Rodrigo.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. I'm here to just talk about the Upper District IRP, Integrated Resources Plan. By way of definition, the IRP represents a long-term strategy for Upper District that will include a diversified mix of water supply and demand management strategies in order to meet both the current and the future water needs, but also addressing other multiple criteria such as cost and water quality and the environment. Another distinction of integrated resources plans is that they explicitly consider risk and uncertainty, and they are developed with stakeholder input. So these are different than traditional water plans in those regards. Why do we think an IRP is needed for Upper District? Well, first, Upper District's costs have increased significantly since 2006, mainly due to the availability of Metropolitan's replenishment water, which is provided at a discount for regional reliability benefits. Also, cost and reliability of MWD water is uncertain in the future. We heard from Devin about a number of different challenges regarding the Colorado River water as well as the Delta. We saw that even in sort of taking a best shot projection of water rates, that they could potentially double in the next 10 to 15 years. The other thing that I think is important to note is even if the imported water on Metropolitan improves, Metropolitan's regional integrated resources plan is counting on new local water development within the region. In fact, almost 400,000 acre feet of new local water is being counted on by the Metropolitan Water District to achieve the reliability that Devin talked about. Local agencies really do need to look at their own in their own backyard to see what cost feasible options there are for local resource development. And then lastly, there are a lot of local options that do exist for Upper District. Some are more expensive than others. And so this integrated resources plan can help the district understand what are the trade-offs in those local resource development options that exist. So who's...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, if I could interject. Not only do we need an IRP, but we also need a groundwater management plan as well. And I was hoping that both of these processes could be progress parallel. Groundwater management plan and also the integrated resources plan.
Okay. And just a background, who's recently done integrated resources plans? Metropolitan has just completed its regional IRP, but a number of other local agencies have done integrated resources plans. The City of Los Angeles, Pasadena, Eastern Municipal Water District, Rancho California Water District, Otay Water District in San Diego County, and then in the north, we have a few, and one of the examples is the Santa Clara Valley Water District. So those are just some examples of agencies that have completed these. Our scope for Upper District is to first assess the water needs, which we look at our projected water demands. We'll be looking at a new water demand forecast for the Upper District, and then we will subtract from that existing firm local water. And that is really representing our gap, if you will, what's needed into the future. And we'll look at it under different hydrologic conditions, not just average conditions, but we'll look at wet conditions and dry conditions and even critically dry conditions into the future. We then will evaluate different alternatives against multiple criteria. And through that process, we will develop a preferred long-term strategy for Upper District, and we will document the findings. Through this process, we'll be working with the producers in a collaborative way. That's our stakeholder involvement through this. We already had one meeting with them to kick the project off, and through the course of this, we'll be meeting with them to help develop the criteria, present the options, and get their feedback. Some alternatives that we are thinking about, and these are not, this does not necessarily represent the full list. We could be looking at more, but some of the possible alternatives that we're thinking about right now for Upper District, just as by way of comparison and looking at the different trade-offs, one would be a continued heavy reliance on metropolitan water, and that's sort of almost a status quo, if you will. We'll look at that option. We'll look at, you know, what the potential costs and the reliability and the water quality will be under that strategy. We also will look at a strategy that maximizes recycled water, both for direct non-potable uses as well as indirect, where we're putting recycled water into the groundwater basin for recharge. Maximizing stormwater capture, how much stormwater additionally could we capture, and looking at strategies to maximize that. And then we are envisioning a couple, we call them hybrid combinations, different mixes. Maybe it's not maximizing recycled. Maybe it's a combination of recycled and stormwater. Water transfers is something we'll be looking at, where Upper District maybe looks at its own water transfers. So we envision a couple different combination alternatives as well. And in terms of criteria, when we evaluate these alternatives, some of the example criteria that we might look at, supply reliability is one. Obviously, we'll look at what is the reliability under droughts. We're also going to look at climate change, potential climate change into the future, how it might affect not only metropolitan supplies, but climate change could very well affect local supplies in terms of what we get from runoff that goes into the groundwater basins. We'll look at water quality, things like salinity in the basin, environmental impacts both locally and within the delta. One of the emerging considerations that a lot of utilities are looking at are greenhouse gas emissions from different water operations, how much greenhouse gases are going to be produced. Things like local control. There's benefit of having control over your resource mix, and that's an important criteria to look at. And then finally, implementation risk. Different strategies have different risks into the future, and we'll look at that as well. So these are some of the example criteria that we'll look at when we develop this strategy for Upper District. Just by way of schedule, September this month, we're completing our data collection, and we want to thank all of the producers that have been providing data to this point, it's been a valuable input. In the next couple months, October through November, we'll be developing the demand forecasts and looking at how much water Upper District needs in terms of a gap analysis. November and December, we'll be looking at our supply options, characterizing those options and combining those into different alternatives. And then December through March, we'll be evaluating those alternatives against those criteria we talked about. And then from March to May, we'll be documenting these findings in a report. And again, throughout this time frame, we'll be meeting with the producers to get their input in various milestones.
I see when you got here some examples of Pasadena and what Pasadena is doing on your recent IRP. I don't know if Mr. Chapman, because time is of the essence, I don't know if the board, do they want to hear about Pasadena and what they're doing?
No, I don't think
so. You want to?
Yeah. Mr. President, Brian, Dan, if you could you just hit this, the criteria in waiting?
Sure.
And the stack bar chart?
Sure.
And that'll give us, I think, enough of a grounding, and then when we come back in the November time frame, we can get in a little more of the process.
No problem.
That's great.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, one of the first things we did with Pasadena, and we just completed this last year, was to first identify what are the criteria that they would like to use to evaluate their alternatives. And we went through an exercise, which we'll go through in this IRP as well, in terms of weighting how important those criteria are. So it's one thing to define the criteria, but another thing to say how important each of the criteria are. So we went through an exercise with stakeholders for Pasadena, and you can see here on this chart we've got things like reliability, affordability, water quality and the environment, cultural and recreational. The city obviously is it's very important that they maintain that cultural perspective that they have, that cultural quality of life, if you will. Water use efficiency, implementation risk, and then energy footprint. And then we asked the stakeholders to weigh how important each of those objectives are. What this diagram shows is the bar shows that there was at least one stakeholder, for example, let's look at reliability. There was at least one stakeholder in that mix that said reliability was not important, 0%. And there was at least one stakeholder that said it was 60% in terms of importance. But the average of the group was about 30%. And so you can see how that played out for all the other objectives. And you can see that reliability was, on average, the most important. In terms of second most important was a tie between affordability and water use efficiency. That was kind of an interesting finding. And then you see that the rest of the criteria were, you know, anywhere ranging from about 6 to 8%. And so we used this in a decision-making process for each of our alternatives that we evaluated. We had different performance measures, and we applied these weights, and we were able to rank our alternatives. I just want to go through. We had a lot of different alternatives. We had the status quo alternative. We had one that actually said, hey, let's minimize met water as much as we possibly can. We had an alternative that did that. And then we had a lot of alternatives in between those two extremes. And what we were able to do is characterize the different mix of water supply that those alternatives would provide. And this is just saying, in the year 2035, we projected the year 2035. And what we did is we said, what if we had a repeat of the allocation that we just went through with Metropolitan? In other words, the last couple of years we were in an allocation mode. And for Pasadena, we said, well, Pasadena's allocation, you know, was a certain amount. And we said, in the year 2035, if that repeated itself, in other words, there was no delta fix, and this same hydrologic condition happened in the year 2035, what would our mix of supplies look like? And if you see here in the status quo alternative, the first alternative, you can see the mix of water supply. And what you see in the red is the deficit or the allocation that that Pasadena would get and the mandatory conservation that they would have to enact. And it's about 7,000 acre feet of water that they would be short in terms of having to deal with. And then we looked at other alternatives, and you can see the minimized MWD supply option, which is the second option. Completely, we could eliminate the shortage, but through a lot of local actions, some of which were very expensive, by the way. In fact, we even looked at Pasadena sharing in seawater desalination through an exchange. So they would have to pay those costs to somebody like the Carlsbad plant, and then they would get an exchange of water. And then we looked at a lot of different other alternatives, one of which is the hybrid one, alternative number 8, which is called hybrid 1. That was another alternative that was able to reduce shortages to essentially zero, but it did so at a significantly lower cost. And in fact, it was actually lower cost than the status quo. And that was the alternative that eventually Pasadena selected as their preferred strategy.
Is there a slide that
explicitly states how much each one of those bars costs?
Yes, in fact, I could show that. This is the cost in terms of, we call it the present value life cycle cost over the entire 35 years. And what you can see is that the status quo alternative is about $450 million in total life cycle cost. And you can see that Hybrid 8 is a little bit higher than that. But in terms of cost to Pasadena, these costs, by the way, are both cost to the water district as well as cost to consumers, because some of the options required conservation and recycled water where developers and consumers were doing that cost. But the cost to Pasadena, which I don't have, but cost to Pasadena was actually lower than the status quo in terms of the utility cost. But you can see how these costs vary from alternative to alternative.
Jim, thank you very much.
Okay.
Just again, all in the effort to give the board a good grounding in the background information of the process that Upper District will be going through, not just working with the producers, but certainly at the board's pleasure, if there's an interest level, we can both delve further into issues like the quantification settlement agreement, the Bay Delta initiatives, as well as have a workshop or two for this board to go through this decision-making process as that information is pulled together.
Great. Great.
So if there's no other questions for Mr. Rodrigo, then we'll move on.
Okay. Thank you.
Before we move on, I'd just like to say on this integrated resources plan process, we need to do it, but I'm a little reluctant to wait until the final report in May to start doing what we need to be doing. And I'm going to have more comments on this on director comments, but up front I'd like to say that we need to get back to the GRIP software process, and we need to be doing it right now. We don't need to wait till May to do that. But for the record, I just I'll talk about that on the director comments.
Mr. Chapman, you want to say something about that?
Yeah, a quick response to Director Robinson's comment, if I may. Director Robinson is spot on. We certainly do not want to sit idly by in 2012 as we work out the details with the integrated resources plan. There's several efforts that we'll be bringing forward. In fact, a presentation next week to the Water Policy Committee on the 2012 project focus, securing alignment for a pipeline, working with Public Works, working with county sanitation to re-up the contract, et cetera. So there's several steps that can be taken to continue to move advanced treatment and direct reuse forward while we await the outcome of the IRP.
Okay, very good. Nothing else on the presentation. We'll move on to item 9C. Mr. Chapman.
Yeah, item 9C is a contract award in not to exceed amount of $460,000 to WaterWise Consulting or Ecotech Services. Ecotech has been Upper District's provider for the high efficiency toilet giveaway programs. We do two events a year. The next one is scheduled now in October, with the second followed in February. About 2,000 HETs in total for the two events. Over almost 22,000 acre feet saved through this program so far. We get great attendance, 700 to 1,500 people, depending on the site and amount of advertising. This cost of $460,000 includes about $100,000 for actual services provided, the balance being for the cost of the toilets themselves. We do receive funding, as Mr. Potty mentioned, from the Metropolitan Water District on the order of $100,000 to offset this cost, as well as contributions from the producers that participate, $30,000 to $40,000 there. A very successful program, and we'd like to just move the ball forward again.
Okay.
Right. At this time, Mr. President, I'll make a motion to approve the contract. As presented.
Okay. Okay, second. No discussion on this motion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anybody abstain? Anybody object? Seeing them? It passed. Moving on to 9E. Yeah, discussion regarding wire delivery agreements with Three Valleys and Central Basin. Hey, you have that agreements here?
Yes, you have copies of these agreements at your plate. Just by way of background, President Trevino had asked a question about the origin of these agreements and the authority to execute these agreements. What they are agreements between Upper District and Central Basin so that Upper District can use Central Basin's connection, 7048, we commonly refer to, in order to have additional operational flexibility working with Metropolitan and Public Works to put large volumes of replenishment water on the ground when it becomes available. It also gets us out of the operational conflict of putting water into the San Diego River downstream of Morris at our connection, USC3. The second agreement is with Three Valleys Municipal Water District, and that is to allow Three Valleys to use Upper District's service connection when Upper District is not using it. And Three Valleys did use that in 2010 to the tune of about 3,000 acre feet, 4,000 acre feet, I believe. And so far, operationally, we've put about 5,000, 6,000 acre feet on the ground using the 7048.
Thank you. My concern with Central Basin is that this agreement was entered into Central Basin for moving of 1,600 acre feet of water at a cost of $590 an acre foot, which puts us roughly about $500,000 that we would be working with Central Basin on moving this water to the producer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Using that delivery system?
Using that delivery agreement, and we're referring to a third agreement, which is a relatively common agreement among member agencies called a water sale agreement. That agreement was to facilitate a transaction that Suburban Water Systems requested. Suburban pumps both in the Central Basin and in the upper area, and they have a purchase order with the Central Basin Municipal Water District that backstops Central Basin's purchase order with the Metropolitan Water District. And the purpose of the sale agreement was to allow Suburban to purchase their water through Central Basin, pass that water through Upper District. The fees associated with that all pass directly through to Suburban, through Upper District, to Watermaster, to Suburban. So Suburban paid the full freight of the agreement, plus paid Upper District's surcharge. That's commonly on top of the Metropolitan rate. Otherwise, it would have been an avoided sale of Upper District's.
Yes, sir. Sure. Well, my concern is when I saw the fact that we're moving 1,600 acre feet at this cost, and we were basically the middle person on this thing. I just wondered how much are we on the hook for this money or anything like that, since we are the middle person.
Yeah. So. Short answer is zero. Yeah. Under my authority, I understood that under the Municipal Water District Act, I had under day-to-day operations the ability to execute sale agreements to facilitate transactions such as this, as well as operational agreements. Any obligation of the district where the district would be put in a position where it was giving up a right or incurring a financial obligation would, of course, have to come to the board. Did discuss these agreements with President Contreras at the time, and he didn't feel a need to take them to the board. I understand the interest of the board to see agreements like this in the future, and it's absolutely not an issue. We'll just pass them through the board.
Or to the Water Committee or
okay. Whatever your pleasure.
All right.
On this point, you mentioned there's continuing controversy with the putting water in the San Diego River. I mean, we've had orifice plate problems just forever. Why is it still controversial? I mean, how hasn't that been resolved yet? What's still outstanding that needs to be resolved? Because water's available. It's got to go in. We can't have any restrictions on getting. Can anybody comment on the orifice plate and putting water in the San Diego River?
Mr. Chapman, you have some answers.
Absolutely. To your point, Director Robinson, Upper District, working very closely with Metropolitan and Public Works, made a big step forward in that regard this year. Specifically, the issue is when the county's operations at Morris Dam, the release of water is at such a rate that adding additional water just below the dam at USG3 pushes the flows on the river above 500 cubic feet per second. The county asks not to turn USG3 on. What we were able to accomplish this year is a operating plan where we would turn USG3 on at night and the county would release during the day. and that allowed both for the county's operations, our operations, as well as contract work at the base of Morris Dam. And that was a big step forward. We made further progress by manufacturing two additional orifice plates, 250 cubic feet per second and 300. The 250 CFS plate is now in place and running, and so far we've picked up about another, I'm going to guess your speed, but I'm going to say 1,100, 1,200 acre feet because of that plate.
Yeah, through the 13th would be a record score. It's about almost 5,000, but another 8,000 is estimated by the end of the month. So
yeah,
it would be well over 11, 12,000.
So making some baby steps in the right direction in terms of coordinating operations.
What are the major outstanding problems that we still need to work on?
Not in the canyon. When the county has to release from Morris and it will restrict our flow, it's for flood control reasons, and they have to do it. It will be out of the river. They have the prerogative to do that. The big advance on that front is on the east side, getting additional replenishment recharge capacity in place along Walnut Creek so we can use SENB 48, another benefit of the operating agreement with Central Basin, and take that big gulf of metropolitan hazard available and stay out of the county's way.
Thank you.
Okay. Items removed from the consent calendar. Are there any? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Abstentions? No. All right. Information items. The information items, press release, as you said, articles are in the report, the board packet. Attorney's report, unfortunately, the attorney's not here.
Yeah, so we'll us to move on.
Very second traffic.
Engineer's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, we do provide, the district does provide the engineer's report at the back table to anybody who needs it. There's copies of the report at the back table. It does include updated key well elevations, historic key well, and it also includes rainfall, in this case, rainfall last year from departure from normal. So there is information back there at the back table. I will report the key well elevation as of September 16th was 232.8. And you know, it hasn't changed over the last week. We had a couple of weeks where it was dropping a little bit. The weather's already starting to cool a little bit. Production's a little down. Still putting water in the spreading rounds. If you drove by 605 and the 210, you can see the spreading rounds have water on. So we're doing well. Most of that water, as the general manager pointed out, we're getting water both from USG 3 on a timely basis, and we're getting water out of the canyon also. Releases out of Morris are still about 75 CFS. We're still getting water out of the canyon. Capacity in the canyon, I've reported before, total storage capacity in the canyon is about 84,000 acre feet. We still have about 43,000 acre feet of water stored in the canyon. They'll bring that down to about 15,000 before the storm season, so that water will be released and shared between the upper and the lower area. We did report two questions from Mr. Robinson regarding the orifice plate and deliveries through USG3. That's a big improvement. No rainfall report, they haven't got any rain this fiscal year. Water quality during August, 82 wells were sampled in the basin for the 2022 program. In July, 34 wells were sampled on that same program, and we did not receive any notices of wells shut down due to water quality issues.
The question I have is, you more than doubled the amount of wells sampled between, is there a reason why, Steve?
The reason why is because some of the sampling requirements are on a quarterly basis and some are on a monthly. So if you double up on a quarterly basis, we will add a number of wells on a quarterly and then we'll drop back down to normal monthly sampling. So there's a series of wells that are done monthly, and then there's an additional quantity of wells that are done on a quarterly basis. We'll pick up a bunch more and it'll drop down.
Okay. I wondered about that. Okay. Thank you. General Manager's report.
Yeah, just a quick note of a couple items. You have at your place an attempt by staff, which I think is a good first cut to better inform the board about future events and meetings. This is a three-month Outlook calendar. It will be provided to you both through the server and by email as well as hard copy, and you can all sort of get used to working with that calendar. Replenishment, by all accounts, is going to be turned off by the end of the month. So the 225,000 acre feet made available by Metropolitan Board will be used up by the end of the month. We will have delivered about 35,000 acre feet is our best estimate at this point, which is only 30-35% of our 100,000 acre foot order.
But to Director Robinson's point, it is a move in the right direction by Upper District in being able to work with Public Works and Metropolitan to put water in the river at a time when we otherwise would not have been allowed to do that. We have been in close contact with Gualco, Pat Leathers, and Sacramento, and it's very clear by all indications now the governor is going to be opening up the water bond. So we will need to be engaging with your board to, one, obviously keep you informed as that process moves forward and seek your direction as to how aggressively to engage in that discussion. And then lastly, we did receive a pretty extensive Public Records Act request for all of the consulting contracts under the Recycled Water Program back through about the beginning of 2010, and staff fulfilled that request.
Who did we get it from?
Mr. Stephen Millard.
Okay.
That's it.
That's the report. Okay, Director's comments. Director Rice.
Yeah, just simply just wanted to follow up on the passed a resolution as part of UCW. I'm happy to see that they have a tentative agreement, and that is strike with the board. So I know UCW, the grocery workers, do appreciate our support and our commitment, you know, your community support and coalition building, the strike with the board, and you know, both sides are happy, you know, things are great. So I just want to
okay. Director Robinson?
Yeah, let me see, where is my comment? I had them in there. I touched on this earlier in the meeting, but I just want to read this into the record, about half page of comments. For the record, I wish to publicly acknowledge the mistake I made about 6 months ago and to apologize for such a mistake. My mistake was my vote to leave the GRIP process. I now realize the Upper District has been essentially dead in the water since then. I offer no excuses for my mistake, but now urge the board to recover our position in regards to the GRIP SOPA process. We should now be actively collaborating with all interested parties with vigor and determination that nothing will divert us. I mean, the excuse 6 months ago was there's a lawsuit filed. We need to do this, and we need to be focused and driven. Stop interrupting myself. So nothing can divert us from completion of final construction of as many phases as possible on one of the few projects that can provide a new source of new water to the San Gabriel Basin. We don't need the IRP process to tell us we need to do that. I mean, it's too obvious. If you look at the past water purchases from Metropolitan Water District, which can't continue in the future, so I mean, this is a no-brainer. My last couple paragraphs. While an expensive piece of the puzzle, delay will likely cost all parties more money. We should now be actively engaging, and to do otherwise is public negligence on our part. This should have been my position 6 months ago. We possess now, and for the last 10 plus years, a 10,000 acre foot contract with the County Sanitation District. It was referred to earlier in this meeting. That contract, we've got to find out. It may be worthless now due to non-performance on our part. If somebody else, maybe we still have rights, maybe we don't, but we haven't been performing, that's not good. The staff needs to check on the status while we redouble our efforts to move forward. We can no longer be willing to sit on our hands. The Produce Project Water may soon be critically needed, and we simply must be moving forward in the San Gabriel Valley together. Our engineer just mentioned when the upper basin reservoirs get down to 15,000 feet, we may have 235 feet of water in the San Gabriel Basin, which means it's possible in 2 to 4 years that we'll be right back where we were 2 years ago. I hope not, but that's a concern of mine. In view of the critical necessity, I now recommend immediate reinitiation on all fronts together with a monthly GRIP update to the board. Monthly reports to continue as a constant progress report until completion of final construction. I think I have an example of when we were serious about GRIP. We had a monthly report that looked like this. And we need to go back to doing this and paying attention and moving forward. So that's the end of my comments, and that's my recommendation. These are the monthly reports. We need to not be sitting on our hands waiting for the IRP process. We need to get going. Okay, that's the conclusion of my comments.
All right.
Thank you. You may have seen in the media that I was very honored last Friday to be asked to speak at the United Nations about water projects I've been involved with and how they can apply to developing nations. The UN, which began its 66th session Friday, is focusing this year on water in developing nations. About 3,900 children die each day because they don't have water. 1.1 billion do not have any drinking water, and 2.1 billion have no sanitation throughout the world. And I hope I made a difference. I was joined by Patricia Mulroy of the Nevada State Water Authority, who I think is one of the greatest leaders of water in the United States today, and David Nahai, who is former head of the DWP, and I was very pleased that Grace Napolitano's staff from Washington was present because I was able to speak a great deal about her efforts in this area. And it was an outstanding experience. I want to thank our general manager, Shane Chapman, and Linda Wade at MWD for helping me very much. It was one of the great experiences of my life. Thank you.
And I just would like to, one thing, get a copy of the judgment for the adjudication of the groundwater situation between Central Base Numbers and Upper District and right.
Yes.
If I can get a copy of that. That's it for me.
Is that a copy of the August judgment? Is that what you asked?
Yes. Any future agenda items?
Yes, sir.
President Trudeau, last week I was able to actually join a rally over at the Hyatt on the Hotel West Hollywood, and they unfortunately had recently gone on strike. And that brought to my mind, you know, we approved so many trips and attendances to conferences and hotels that I was wondering if we could possibly bring, you know, let directors know which hotels are on strike or in conflict, and possibly consider, you know, banning future, you know, participation, just different hotels. Maybe we should, you know, make sure that we're in compliance and not, you know, disrupting the strike.
What about a future agenda item?
A future agenda item.
Yeah.
Noted.
Anything else for future agenda items? Okay. We don't have a closed session today. Our general counsel's not here, so motion to adjourn. Okay. We are adjourned.